sick of listening to your shit. Shut the fuck up.
If you're a heckler, shut up. If you're a hater, shut up. If you ain't holding the mic, then shut the fuck up. Fuck boy, shut up. Fake friends, shut up. If you ain't about growth, then shut the fuck up. Negrophobic, shut up. All lives matter, shut up. White man with a forked tongue, shut the fuck up. Victim blamer, shut up. Uncaring, shut up. If you're worthy to our benefit, shut the fuck up. Liar, liar, shut up. Wolf crier, shut up. When grown folks are talking young, and shut the fuck up. You a traitor, shut up. Manipulator, shut up. Real friends know the time to shut the fuck up. Wrong preacher, shut up. Wicked preacher, shut up. If you ain't got any answers, hey, shut the fuck up. Interrupter, shut up. Obstructor, shut up. If you ain't holding the peace pipe, shut the fuck up. Hey, 2021.
Shut the fuck up.
That's what's up.
Shut up.
Hey, welcome. Bienvenue to another episode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black, aka B Blizzak, aka Mr. ShutUpPodcast.com on the web. Before I start, gotta teach you new listeners, 411 for all you new listeners, that this podcast is protected by the red, the black, and the green, and waves a red, black, and a red, blue flag. Rouge et bleu is up in this bitch. I'm representing and holding it down for black folks who grew up in the 80s watching TV Ontario, Télé Québec, and Soul in the City on Much Music. This episode is being recorded on November 20th. 2022, what is it, 8:14 p.m. minus 8 blood clot degrees outside. This episode is also brought to you by the letter F. F for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label, and as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. All right, okay. Let's get started. Before I go on the rundown, the little Wakanda Forever at the beginning was just me giving out a shout out to, or just pointing out the fact that I just came back from watching for a second time the Black Panther movie. And as it stands, I'm holding on to my first opinion, and it's like, yeah, white boy, no white boy, I do not want to hear your thoughts on Black Panther. And it's not that I'm racist, it's because I'm racist. No, I mean, look. This is the thing with these white kids, it's like they feel like any opinion matters, especially, it's not that any opinion matters, it's uninformed opinions, man. Uninformed, useless, pointless, just serving yourself kind of opinions. It just doesn't, look, Google the concept of uninformed opinion. Well, you don't have to Google it, but, you know. A lot of y'all just don't understand the concept of an uninformed opinion, but that's not the point of today's episode. Today's episode, we are going to actually have like an extensive rundown list. Well, it's actually more birthday shout-outs of what happened this week. But, oh my God. The reason I was explaining how I saw, I just came back from watching the Black Panther is because I'm actually recording later than usual on a Sunday night. And I felt the need to point that out. And I guess this is more of a tap myself on the back because, tap myself on my back. Because my commitment to staying consistent in recording this shit. So this is just me saying, yeah, man. I mean, like, you know, this is like late on. You know what it is? Sunday night, I fucking hate Sunday nights. I think I hate Sundays. Why? Because it's the end of the weekend. I love Friday, the beginning of the weekend, but the end of the weekend just drives me fucking nuts. And I know most of you, or some of you, will likely be listening. Like, if you're listening this when this episode is released, so you're listening to this on a Monday, and you're probably reminiscing on how much, you probably already felt what I'm feeling right now, assuming you're not one of those people with jobs that they actually love. Like you're not in a job that just the only thing good about it is the money. That came out wrong. Look, I'm just trying to there's this feeling every Sunday. I have it, and it just bothers me, man. But it all has to do with the fact that tomorrow is Monday. I'm going to have to wake up and go back and, you know, tap dance for these crackers. It's not, I mean, you know what? Maybe I should focus on trying to be grateful. You know, it's not that I'm going into a shitty job. It's just, I don't know. I just wish I was doing shit that was, I'm at a point in my life, I wish I was doing shit that was fulfilling. Only problem is I make that wish, but I'm not willing to put it to work. I'm just going to bitch about it. I'm going to be one of those people who just bitch about the things that they should have, would have, wished they could do. And maybe one day I'll snap out of it. But right now, today, nope. I'm just going to go back to hating the fact that it's Sunday night. And as soon as I hit stop on this recording, I'm going to have to entertain reality and get some sleep so I can wake up on a Monday. Here's hoping this episode cheers me up. So this is what we're gonna do. Okay, I'm gonna cheer myself up. All right, okay, all right. Let's go through the run sheet. First item on the list is intro. The title of this episode, I'm debating between. It relates to the same. It all comes from the same poem. You know what? Instead of telling you what I'm debating on which title to use, I'm just going to say that it comes from. It was inspired by a piece, by a spoken word, a poetry, by a poem by Talam AC. Yes, I've mentioned him a lot. And it's called Brotherly Love. See, the reason why I ended up picking, I remembered this poem is because on the last episode, I probably told you about, I made a quote. I quoted, I used a quote about from Talam AC, from his piece. And realized that I misquoted. Well, I didn't say the full thing. And it goes, I tell him, a man is judged by what's in his soul and what's in his heart and not just what's in his pocket. When I quoted that, quoted that verse, I might have said, a man is judged by what's in his soul and that's it. And not what's in his pocket. No, he said soul and heart. And I'm still struggling with the concept of the value of having a good soul and having a good heart. I am not saying there's no value to it. I'm saying I still can't get up. Like if you gave me the choice between money, cash, hoes, versus having a good soul and a good heart. I don't know, man. I think I mean, being an asshole, I mean, excuse me. I would go with the money, cash, hoes. Look, it's just where I am right now. Okay, instead of apologizing, that's just where I am in my moment of growth. I, like that whole silver and gold, I rather have Jesus than silver and gold. Yeah, I remember, growing up on that shit, and I felt like that was a ripoff. Fuck that. I mean, what am I going to do with Jesus? I can't make mortgage payment with Jesus. I can't fucking put heat in this house with Jesus. I can't fucking pay for lap dance with Jesus. You know what I mean? I'm just saying. I think I'm going through this part in my life where I'm understanding, I'm trying to understand, okay, somewhere there's a rich person who could look you in the eye and say, yo, what it means that money can't buy happiness, you know, or who could tell you shit like, you know, money isn't everything, but we ain't got the money, it's not that I'm broke, but I'm just saying, it's one of those concepts that I don't understand. I'm trying to make sense of, and okay. If I had to explain that verse by Talam AC, a man is judged by what's in his soul and what's in his heart, and not what's in his pocket. I couldn't do it. Now, I have to remember now, because in the last episode, like I'm reminding myself, by the way, this is so unprepared, this episode, this is why I'm rambling. In the last episode, I was talking about a certain sadness men feel that I'm dealing with, that I'm having difficulty acknowledging. Anyways, and it's only after I published the last episode and looked up that verse that I quoted in the episode and saw the track Brotherly Love, it hit me. Brotherly Love, I'll explain it to you. It's a track worth, like, you know, there's a link to it in the show notes. But I'll explain, this is my interpretation of it. It's Talon Macy, and it starts out with how he's trying to get some sleep, and he's, it's a great poem, right? I'm not doing it any justice by the way, but anyway, this is my interpretation of it. He's trying to get some sleep, and he can hear some asshole outside blaring their horn. And he's probably feeling, and Talam is probably feeling like I am right now. It's like, fuck, man, I need my sleep because I got to wake up so I can go to work. But he uses the expression, I need my sleep. It's the only time that I get real peace on this fucking planet. So, and he goes out and he's about to, you know, talk to the dude. I say talk in quotation. And, you know, look, dude, this neighborhood sucks. And now you're making shit even worse. So he's going to confront homie about the fucking noise. And he goes in, he opens the door, and he realizes that it's his friend who has liquor in one hand and I guess pictures of his kids in the other hand. And he invites him in the car. And the point of the story, or the storytelling, is what he's getting at is how his friend is really low, is going for a low, and is considering suicide. And Talam, in that moment, completely changed and goes to wanting to heal that situation. The reason why I connected with this piece, the first time I heard it, I just thought it was a piece about how some poor guy is being being abused by his the mother of his child. Because there's a part where he talks about how, you know, this man, Talam's friend in his poem, is just a guy who just wants to be a father to his child. And because of the divorce that he had with his wife, he can't do that. And it just hit me on how, you know, I make reference to this article that I read a very long time ago, and I guess I should find it. But it just talks about, but it speaks on this article that I read about how divorce hits men very strongly. Now, I'm not going on a case that women don't divorce your men. No, whether you're a man who deserved to get dropped by your wife or not, it's still a pain. I don't know if I would use the word trauma, but guys like to act tough when they're divorced. But the truth is, yo, a divorce, when you see a divorced man, especially someone who loved their wife, you're looking at a man who's trying to heal. But we don't talk about that shit. It's not, you know, men don't, you know, fuck it. We're all about, fuck it. I'll walk it off, whatever that pain is. The point, I'm making one point out of this, is I'm trying to make is, and this is in relation to a discussion that I had with my therapist, is how she said that a lot of men are going through what I'm going through, especially my age. The thing with us men is we don't make connections. We don't look to make connections. If we do, it's like, you know, at a strip club, a titty bar, whatever. And when I mean connection, I don't mean sexual. I mean like, not, is it intimate? Like intimate connections. Like bonding, the way women have connection figured out way better than we do. Yes, I'm generalizing. But I am going through this. I am going through this struggle where I'm surrounded by people who either don't understand the question or don't have the answers. And maybe there's a man going through what I'm going through who I could speak to and would probably be able to give me some wisdom that would help me out. But the problem is I don't trust men. And I'm not saying this as the woman who's jaded against men. But when you think of toxic masculinity, like being a man is all about, I don't trust men. I find myself that when I'm around men, I'm constantly in the state of having to prove, constantly having to assume, prove my masculinity around them. So I'm always tough. You know, it's like if a bullet were to penetrate my body, I'd have to pretend like, yeah, shit don't hurt. I'm all right, nigga. I'm gonna be all right. You know what I mean? Hold that shit in. And that's the wild part. Okay. I don't trust being vulnerable around men. Whether I'm wrong or right, that's not my point. I'm saying the state that I'm in, I'm just talking feelings right now. I'm realizing a handicap that I have is I have an inability to be vulnerable around other men. Like, I was considering signing up, joining some, like, men's support group, but, again, I don't trust being vulnerable around men. And the thing, well, one, two, when men come together, get together, sometimes it's not really for the best intent, like Fight Club. I've seen the movie Fight Club. Fight Club, Ben's Rights Group. You know, I'm not trying to join that. I'm just trying to say people who I could share notes with, people who I could, who knows, maybe benefit from. Like, I mean, I remember being in college and thinking all this resource, all this information I had available to me. I'm talking about one dude had the questions for the exam of last year. One dude I went to an all-boys school. Well, it just worked out. It was a STEM program. Went in the computer program, so it was mainly men in the program. And the women there were either, doesn't matter, okay? But it was mainly, but what I'm saying is, there was such an opportunity to learn, to gain from. Okay, sure, there was no one there that you could go, you know, hey, I need a hug, shit like that. No, I mean, but there was just, I feel like it's the closest thing to a support group with men that I've ever experienced. I think that's what I'm trying to get at. That's what I'm saying. Anyways, the reason why I chose this poem by Talal Masih, or to find my title for this episode by Talal Masih, is I was just thinking about that poem and that loneliness, that sadness that I was describing in the episode 30. And this one, I feel like Talam is saying, yeah, no, I you're not alone, B. Some of my homies are like that, and one of them I had to reach out. And the poem just made me feel heard. That's just what I'm trying to say. It made me feel heard, and it reminded me, it was more proof that, yo, B, there are other men out there who are suffering like you are, and maybe y'all, all you guys need is a support group. My problem is, I'm thinking on joining one or starting. Well, I can't start one because I just don't have the right mindset for it at the moment. Like I said, I don't feel comfortable being, what do you call that? Vulnerable around other men. Damn, I've been at it for too long. Okay, I'm going to start timing these segments because I've been talking for too long. Anyway. The reason I was just going to bring up how I'm drinking hot chocolate at the moment. I just discovered someone just put me on to Mr. Puffs. Yes, I know. Mr. Puff. That's what it's called. Insert your, all of you. I know, Bink, all your, insert your homophobic jokes on the side. But yeah, Mr. Puffs. Man, that shit's delicious. It's some fucking, this podcast is not endorsed by Mr. Puff, but I'm just saying, damn, that shit was good. And a nice little dessert. But it goes great with hot chocolate. Well, when it's hot. Okay, all right, intro. Where am I at right now? 18 minutes. Okay, let me start with, okay, let's jump into This Week in Therapy. This Week in Therapy, I discovered I don't know if she's for real. That's the thing with me. Anytime I see words like mentor, teachers, spiritual teacher, I'm like, you know, I'm skeptical of these people, but I will say, this person just happened to say something that I needed to hear in that particular time that I'm going, in that particular moment in my life, and I'm going to share these thoughts with the rest of y'all. So, this person's tweet came to me on Instagram. Her name is Alisa Boye, Francis Boye, and she's a HSP mentor, whatever that means. But the first quote that I like, and it goes, I'm just going to read it out because it's just so dope. And again, link will be in the show notes. And she was talking about how to know if you're a highly sensitive person. Yeah, spoiler alert, I'm a highly sensitive person. I'm still coming to terms with that shit. And it's not something that I broadcast to the world, but yeah, that's where I'm at. I'm still learning. I'm learning on this shit. Anyway, so she wrote, how to know if you're a highly sensitive person. Next slide. First, let's cover the fact about high sensitivity. High sensitivity has been around forever, but the term HSP came in early 1990s. The term highly sensitive person was coined by in 1991 by psychotherapist and researcher Dr. Elaine Aron. The scientific term for the trait is sensory processing sensitivity, SPS. High sensitivity is a trait, not a medical disorder. See, I grew up being told, believing that shit was a medical disorder or punk ass bitch assness. I grew up around dudes who were big on that ultra masculinity thing, and yeah, you know, and they weren't trying to hear that. They weren't trying to hear anything about, you know, being sensitive. But anyways, let me go back to the reading. High sensitivity is a trait, not a medical disorder. It's important to note that this is a trait similar to being an introvert or an extrovert. It's not a disorder, nor is it something that needs to be diagnosed. To learn if you're an HSP, you can take Dr. Elaine Aron's HSP self-test on hpsperson.com. Again, the link will be in the show notes. High sensitivity doesn't mean emotional sensitivity. Being an HSP isn't about being emotional and crying all the time. It's about how our nervous system are wired and the way we take in the world around us. Highly sensitive people process on a deep level, picking up many details that others may miss. I can relate to that. Our depth of processing can cause us to feel more overstimulated at times because we're taking in so much. Okay. A highly sensitive person likely has many of these traits. One, they feel emotions deeply and intensely. Check. They're annoyed when people ask them to do too much in a short period of time. Check. It's easy for them to be moved to tears. Check. Wait, hold on a second. I say check, but it's I'm agreeing with that one. I'll get back. That's a longer story about being moved to tears. Okay, it's true. My problem is I'm repressing these tears, so it's I'm having a difficult existence here. They're deeply moved by art, music, and beauty. Check. Loud noises, bright lights, or a comfortable fabric can be distressing to them. Maybe not for me. Bright lights, because it's kind of brighter than the motherfucker up in here. But anyway, whatever. They often need alone time to decompress. Check. Definitely. It's easy for them to become overwhelmed when they have a lot to do. Check. When I have two things to do. They are a spiritual person. Used to be. They have a rich inner life and imagination. Oh, that's for sure. Check. They are very empathetic. Yep, I can see that. And then did this help? Share this post to spread the word about what it means to be an HSP. For more in-depth PDF version of this, okay, whatever. Yeah, okay. All right. I hope that was insightful. I'm going to read the second one. There's a second part that, shit. Man, maybe it's all that popcorn. Hold on a second, okay? Just go ahead and play. Excuse me. Whew. Okay, what I just did is drank some water. And something was off in my system, and I guess I'm just fucking thirsty. God damn. You'd think I was high or something like that. Anyway, okay. All right. Second slide that she posted that I like is one reason highly sensitive people struggle with self-worth. Initially, I was just going to read that, but then I saw, I just tied the two things together. But that actually has been my struggle this week, especially to tie it in with the poem that I was reading by Talal Masih, specifically the line, a man is judged by what's in his soul and what's in his heart and not what's in his pocket. Right. I was raised, it's like I picked up all the bad habits in my eyes. Growing up, self-worth were determined by shit on the outside, by the car you had, by the girl you're standing next to you, by the money you can show off, by the influence you can, by being able to say, hey, asshole, you're fired. By being able to say, you know what? I'm gonna buy Twitter. You know what I mean? Like that's you know, okay, people hate me, but fuck it, man. I can fuck up your life. Like, that's how your self-worth is judged. I'm not saying it's accurate. I'm just saying at the moment, that's what I've been taught to make sense of. But with that said, I'm reading this. The reason why this caught my eyes, because one reason highly sensitive people struggle with self-worth. I've been plagued with the concept of self-worth, trying to determine my own self-worth. And based on this, it's likely tied into me being a highly sensitive person. So I'm going to keep reading. All right. She goes, highly sensitive people often feel like they don't quite fit in. Just for sure. Being different is uncomfortable, right? More than anything, we want to feel normal, quote unquote normal. So we become people pleaser. We adopt beliefs that if we always do the right thing, then we'll be accepted, then we'll fit in. Yeah, I've had a big thing about trying to fit in. Consciously or unconsciously, we tell ourselves, if I do things right, I don't mess up, then I'll be good enough. With that belief, we're crushed at the first glimpse of imperfection. It's a threat to our chance. It's a threat to our chance at fitting in. It feels unacceptable. So we avoid making mistakes. Yep, that's me, all right. We push ourselves to do it all. We strive for perfection. We become hypervigilant. Yep, and committed and obsessed. Man, I thought my hypervigilance being me had to do with slavery, but that's another story. All right. Okay. Our identity becomes tied to productivity, accomplishments, and being well-liked. I'm just feeling so attacked by all this. The need to be liked by everyone. The need to be accepted for something we're not. The need to be perfect. This is what burns out highly sensitive people. Man, she's talking to me. This belief that we, the way we are naturally isn't enough. There always comes a point where we can no longer fake it. It takes too much energy to be perfect. It's exhausting trying to please everyone. You got that right. Inevitably, we reach a breaking point. We crack. We get sick. We can't do it anymore. There's a beauty in the breakdown. So you say, yeah, the fat in your pocket, I bet. It's the moment our souls can expand and breathe and dance. As the shell of who we thought we had to be falls to pieces, we're reintroduced to a radiant souls we've always been. Okay, that's deep. That's kind of, you know what I'm thinking about is, it's true. Doing this podcast stresses me out because I can't see my audience. And because I can't see them, my brain, my imagination kicks in and imagines a bored, annoyed, frustrated, angry audience just staring at me, just wishing that I would shut the fuck up. It's like, B, man, this shit is boring. What the fuck? Why the fuck do I want to hear about hypersensitivity people and blah, 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 blah. So, like, my need to be perfect is acting up, which is what makes these podcasts, these episodes, so stressful for me. You know, I gotta admit, these episodes are more for me than it is for you. If you're listening to it, then high five. You and I should hang out. If you're like, you know, getting something out of it, I'm like, wow, that's amazing. But at the moment, I am fighting a motherfucking demon that's in my head telling me that, you know what, this shit ain't worth doing. I'm proving myself wrong. Here we are. And that concludes, oh man, fuck, I took up a lot of time. Yeah, and the audience is not complaining about all the time I took. And not really said much. Anyway, yeah, okay. So this concludes This Week in Therapy. Now we're going to jump, well, now to jump into random thoughts. Now before we do some random thoughts, usually in my intro I do hip hop history and movie release and movie history. And I'm going to do that now because there's a whole lot to go through. But I'm going to rush through it, all right? Instead of looking up dates. But yeah, so this week, what is it? Like I said, this will be recorded on November 20th. So the week between, yeah, this week, the fucking week, 7 days, what's when, between now and the 13th, shit that happened between this time in history, right? So happy birthday, E-40. Happy birthday, Reverend Run from Run DMC. Yo, you guys seen the movie Crush Groove? There's a line by Run that I'm hoping one day to be able to say to my actual life where he says, "We had a whole lot of superstars on this stage here tonight. But I want y'all to know one thing." The crowd goes, "Wow, this is my motherfucking house. And when I say whose house, I want y'all to say B-Black's house." Whose house? Okay, I'm going to work on that. Because he says Run his house, but, you know, I guess I should say B's house because one syllable, but whatever. Okay, all right, yeah. So happy birthday, Run from Run DMC. Happy heavenly 52nd birthday to Fife Dawg from A Tribe Called Quest. May he rest in peace. And, yeah, that's it for the birthdays. Now, what else happened this week in history, and today's in history, is on this day, 1996, Mobb Deep released Hell on Earth. Yeah, no, I did buy that album, maybe on CD, but it wasn't as impressive as their first album, but, you know, but this is where we're at. November 14th, 2000, Prodigy released his solo debut, HNIC. I wasn't a big fan. I mean, no, don't get me wrong, Prodigy was a dope-ass rapper, but he wasn't on my list. I think because I was still grieving for Pac. I know it was 40 years ago, but yeah, I was still grieving for Pac, and since Pac didn't like Mobb Deep, then I didn't like Mobb Deep. Even though I secretly listen to their music. But yeah, anyway. Oh, all this to say, November 14th, Prodigy released a solo album that I still haven't listened to. But I'm on it. Okay, what else? 25 years ago today, well, this week, Notorious B.I.G. dropped the video for Sky's the Limit. Stay far from timid. Don't make move if your heart's in it. And scream the limit. Sky's the limit. Anyway, yeah. Okay, I fucked up the verse. Whatever. 2003, G-Unit released their debut album, Beg for Mercy. Now, that I did buy. You know, it was all right, you know. But I did like the cover art on the for that album. Yeah, Young Buck's music is what did it for me. I think that was the introduction of Young Buck, but whatever. Last on my list for hip-hop history, 2003, Jay-Z dropped the Black Album. Now, that was a dope album. I'm not sure how I got into Jay-Z, whether it was Blueprint 3 or the Black Album, but I remember going through the Black Album and going, oh, and slowly understanding Jay-Z style. Because I wasn't a fan of Jay-Z at the beginning. It was probably in 2003 after the Black Album that I started, like, you know, Jay-Z was like scotch for me. You know, it grew. It Whoa, demons in me. I had to refine my taste. My taste had to be refined in order for me to finally appreciate Jay-Z's lyrics. Hold on. Woo! Some of that Mr. Puff got stuck in my choke. Woo! Okay. Insert your homophobic jokes in here. All right, okay. Movie history. Waiting to Excel came out this week. All right, you guys are going to make me look up the date? Okay, fine. I'll look up the date. Waiting to Excel, 27 years ago. No. Hold on a second. What I can tell you is, this is how old I am. I was around when that movie came out. I didn't see the movie, but I did cop that the soundtrack. Oh my god, we all had that soundtrack on repeat. Oh, 5.9. Okay, release date December. Wait, what? December 22nd. Oh wait, is it the soundtrack that came out? Oh wow, this fucks up my today in history. Oh, so according to this, it was released in December 22nd, 1995. Not sometimes in November. Wow, okay, well, there goes my credibility. Is it the soundtrack? Okay, you know what? Fuck it. We're going to skip Waiting to Excel. That's a big mistake. But Spike Lee, Malcolm X movie, did that come out during the November, this week in November? Okay, let me, it's a good thing I'm checking. Yo, I guess, see all these, this shit comes up in my tweets. And that's, I'm just repeating shit that I'm seeing in my tweets. Yeah, November 18, 1992, the Malcolm X movie. Boy, I re-saw that movie. Yeah, it was a great movie. And, you know what? I'm not going to do a review about it, but it was just a dope-ass movie. Shout out to Denzel Washington. And get your hands out of my pocket, nigga! Yeah, shout out to Denzel Washington, Spike Lee, everyone involved in that movie. Shout out to them. Okay, all right, okay, so that's it for movie history. Okay, now let's get into random thoughts. I have four items to go through for random thoughts. First one is, all right, okay, I'm going to play this clip. Okay, I titled this My Experience with NoFap. And for those of you who are not familiar with NoFap, NoFap is a community, I believe so, I think based out of Reddit. It's, and it's, I was going to say a bunch of men, majority men. I'm going to believe it's majority men, but who are committed to not jerking off, watching porn. And because apparently some studies came out that, you know, it's to address porn addiction. And yeah, to address porn addiction and I bought into that shit because it just felt like, look, man, I needed some self-discipline. And I'm like, yeah, man, stop touching your dick, man. Fuck it. You know what I mean? Stop fantasizing out of these women that you ain't gonna fuck. And I joined the experience. You know, power to you if you're into that thing, but just don't let it turn you into an asshole. That's the only tip that I would give. Anyway, but I'm going to play this clip that I found on, it was 2:56. I'll play it, okay? The clip that I found on Twitter, and the caption goes, this creepy Christian influencer got so horny at the gym that he had to stop and do a video about how to not lust in public. I'm not going to play the whole thing, but I'll play so you can get just enough of it, just to get a gist of what he's saying. Here we go. So this is a man right now. I'm just going to describe the video. The dude was in the gym, exactly like the caption said, and I guess he took some time alone. He's sitting probably in the weight section, and he's talking on the phone, and his caption of the Christian, he says, how to not lust at the gym. And I'm listening to this guy. I'm like, you poor soul. You're such a sweet kid. Reminds me of my young youth. Oh, reminds me of my attitude before I joined NoFap, minus the Jesus part. Okay, here we go.
So I'm going to show you this hack for whoever needs it. Basically, every time, for example, whenever you see, like, you know, that a girl's looking good, like from your peripheral or something, right? What I usually do is I turn the other way and I say, it's for you, Lord. And I'm in constant communion with the Lord as I'm working out, as I'm stretching, whatever the case is. But today I was like stretching and my eyes just caught something. And like, you know, like a girl. And it was like quick, but then I wasn't ashamed of it. I just brought the Lord into it. And I was like, God, what do I do with that? Like, okay, you know, boom, I looked. What do I do with that? Like, I don't want any lust in my heart. Like, so I was praying. I was like, Lord, if there's any lust in my heart, in Jesus' name, let it be removed. Father, I want to honor you in this. And so I just brought him into it. And I was like, yo, like, it's crazy because, you know, when you be getting in a relationship with, like, a very pretty girl, like many, most of us have, maybe a month or two later.
All right. Okay. This dude's getting boring. Plus, it's 2:56. Fuck that shit. Anyway, no, The reason I'm sharing this clip or making note of it is one, as I remember being in this guy's shoes, is of wanting to be in control of my domain. Yo, when I was a teenager, I think we all go through it, man. Shit, you couldn't tell me shit. I was young, dumb, full of cum. I was obsessed with women's anatomy. I was obsessed with, so this was before the internet. Seeing boobs on TV was like the best part of my day. It was like just obsessed with lusting over women. Like it overdrive. It's likely why it was so difficult for me to understand feminism at the time. Like it was so easy. That lust, all that. Oh my God. It's that desire. All that shit was that he talks about. It was like, it was in me. And yeah, it was driving me nuts. It was like, it didn't feel like it was driving me nuts, but it was an obsession. It was in shit. Like I think of dogs. When you look at a dog, when you give him a treat. Yeah. That's what sex, that's what the women's anatomy was like. Yo, you could show me a picture of a naked woman and say, hey, we're going to need you to die in this war for us. And if you do it, you'll get 72 of these chicks waiting for you in heaven. Fuck, I believe you. My dick is an idiot. I'd be like, yeah, fuck, let's do this. Whatever. Yeah, I was just no one to talk to. But with that said, what him and No Fat reminds me of is how I can see this dude growing up to be a man who cheats on his wife. And says, Lord, man, come on. You know how these hoes be. I can't control myself. Like the way how he's using, instead of, okay, I guess I'm saying both NoFap and what he's doing is like an unhealthy way to deal with boys' sexuality. Okay, for NoFap, it's basically, there's not a sense of accepting the parts you can't change, with the parts that are natural. The idea of, just turn down sex. Look, the problem I had with NoFap, the reason why it didn't work out for me is because I did do Held Back and all that did all that. But all it did is, one, I felt like it wasn't addressing, like there was a void that was missing. If you're trying to get rid of a bad habit, a way to help you address that bad habit is realizing why you have that bad habit in the first place. Because before you can get rid of it, in order for you to get rid of it, is you got to figure, like, it's serving you. It's figuring out why it's serving you in the first place, why it served you in the first place. And you can figure that out. Then you can find a way to serve whatever need that's missing and replace that bad habit with something more healthier. That's what I'm trying to say. So I went cold turkey off pork on porn and all that shit. And then I can't remember what caused me to fall. Oh, it might have been sex, having sex with a woman. And then all it did was like, it just set me back down a path of my porn. It just made me want it more. It just made me. So what I'm saying is, if you're going to do shit like NoFap, okay, first of all, I'm dismissing this Christian kid. Yeah, don't turn to him. Don't turn to this kid for help with sexuality. Yeah, man, don't do shit like, Jesus, help me out with, nah, fuck that. Jesus, I have a boner. You need to help me address this boner. Nah, fuck that. That's kind of weird. But I am saying, there's a healthier way to approach that shit. NoFap wasn't really giving me solutions that I needed to address this problem. But I'm trying to not make fun of this kid, even though, the whole Jesus thing. Oh, this guy's an influencer. Okay, I'm going to make fun of him because he's an influencer. Yeah, him as an influencer, but as a boy dealing with being horny, being their sexuality, I get it, dude. Like, there's not a lot. Not a lot of people are willing to give you answers, useful, healthy answers, man. The streets is out there. There's a whole bunch. Yep, this is probably another case I'm making for better sex education classes for kids, for young boys. I mean, girls too, but yeah, but young boys. Yo, you want to teach boys about, you know, consent, not raping, yeah, you would start in a sex ed class. Yeah, man, but I have this joke about how the only thing they taught me in sex ed class is what happens when a penis gets inside a vagina. And I'm like, fuck it, kind of redundant because I know what the fuck happens. I watch a lot of porn. Yeah, I've seen what happens. What I needed to know is how does the penis get inside the vagina? But they don't teach you shit like that. But all right, off topic. Anyways, this concludes my experience with NoFap. Okay, 1 of 4. Now 2 of 4 now. Okay, so the title for this one, this segment is, how many chances are they going to give this white man? There's an article, again, in the show notes about how Donald Trump this week announced that he is going to run for president again in the United States. And a lot of people are playing it off, whatever. Yeah, this is just a joke. He ain't going to do it. It's look, man. Take this motherfucker seriously. If there's one thing Donald Trump has taught us, is don't underestimate his punk ass. No matter how stupid he sounds or what he says, don't underestimate this motherfucker. That dude could have won re-election if it wasn't for the fact that people took, you know, they hated him so much. They learned their lesson from his first win and realized, yo, holy shit, there's a lot of racist people in this country. But that's not what I want to talk about. It's more, how many fucking chances are they going to give this fucking mediocre white man? This dude, it's funny how they talk about Donald Trump, the twice impeached president. The motherfucker who instigated a insurrection on the Capitol. Yo, that insurrection in the Capitol, a lot of like terrorist group were looking at that shit and going, oh wow, that's what we did wrong here. Next time we want to overthrow the American government, we need to send white people in. Let's see if we can get Donald Trump on our side. And whatever, man. I'm just saying, how many fucking chances are they? Look, if you're one of those people who still don't understand white privilege, look at Donald Trump. Yeah, you know what? There's so many examples of white privilege. At this point, you just don't want to learn about it. Yeah, fuck that. How many chances are they going to give this white man? That's really what I'm asking. What did I say this? Oh, shit. I think I wrote this when I was high. I said, the funny thing about Donald Trump is the difference between... Here's for all you white people who are like, what's the difference between black power and white power? Okay, sounds racist, but if one is racist, then they both have to be racist. Let me tell you something, white people. When I'm backing a black person, when I'm backing, standing behind a black person, it's usually because I'm doing it in the name of excellence, backing history, or making history. When white people are backing a white person, they're backing fucking people like Trump. Completely different people. Completely two different. Sorry. I'm just realizing that shit probably doesn't make sense to you, but it makes a whole lot of sense to me. But I'm okay. All right. I'm going to skip that one and re-ask the question. How many chances are they going to give this white man? Fuck, Melania, man. Run away. You know what? Fuck it, man. She's in the... I have an image of... Maybe because, you know, this is... me being a black guy worrying about a white woman and stuff, but I have an image of her being trapped in a marriage. Not that I'm have any intention to save her from her marriage, but my point is, yo, holy shit, lady, fuck, drop that dude. But something tells me she can't. Maybe her immigration status is locked between her marriage, but whatever. Okay. All right. Next piece of news. This one is actually sad. It's, I remember just seeing that video and ignoring it. Okay, I'm gonna play the clip. And the subject goes, yeah, this is a downer. It goes, Canada, a St. Catherine man says he will choose medically assisted death over homelessness. CTTV News. Okay, I'm going to play the video, and here goes.
Who is it?
Here we go.
Afraid to die?
She goes, are you afraid to die?
Afraid to die?
Who is it? Yeah,
Amir Farsoud has applied for medically assisted dying, known as MAID. He lives in constant agony due to a back injury, but has started the process for end of life because his rooming house is up for sale and he can't find anywhere else to live that he can afford. He barely survives on Ontario disability support payments, which are just over $1,200 a month. He doesn't want to die, but being homeless is not an option.
I know in my present health condition, I wouldn't survive it anyway.
Farsoud meets the criteria for MAID: physical suffering due to disability that cannot be relieved. His doctor, who knows Farsoud's real reason for MAID is his fear of being homeless, signed off on the application in August. Farsoud needs a second to do the same. There's a 90-day waiting period. He believes he could potentially access MAID in about a month.
I don't wish to be dead, even with the pain, even with the meds. I still want to be here.
The CEO of Dying with Dignity Canada, a charity for end-of-life rights, says the organization has raised concerns about cases like this with the federal government.
The fact that people are feeling compelled to apply for MAID or to even ask about MAID because they can't get the basic fundamentals to live a life, it's shameful. You know, as a country, as a government, we should be ashamed.
When medically assisted dying became legal in Canada in 2016, it was only for people facing imminent death. Accessibility was expanded last March.
We have created a system where ending of life is an easier and cheaper solution than actually investing in healthcare and social support.
Trudeau Lemons is a professor of law and bioethics at U of T. He argues MAID devalues the life of people with disabilities who often live in poverty. Canada is one of the most liberal countries in the world when it comes to medically assisted dying. In March, it's further expanding eligibility to include people with mental disorders. It's expected MAID will be about 4% of all deaths in this country. That's in line with Belgium and the Netherlands.
Damn. Mm-mm. Yeah, man. Hold on. Someone put a. Hold on a second. Amir tweeted an update. Oops, sorry. Amir tweeted an update. He is no longer in this predicament. He is asking folks to support others in this situation, like Mina. Oh, okay. All right. Okay. I guess that's some good news. Yeah, he's no longer in this predicament. But I'm just. This goes back to what I was talking about, you know, men's group or creating. Okay, I did say men's group at the beginning, but I think what I'm really looking for is creating a club for empathetic people. People who feel empathy, who are able to feel empathy, like put us all in one room and we support each other in that way. I think that's probably what I'm looking for. Because, yeah, this life can be fucking hard. Like, it got to a point where I remember, it's not that I'm suicidal, but I remember just having those thoughts, having these discussions with a therapist. It's like, I'm just saying, if the option was given, if the Grand Reaper were to show up and say, hey, look, I tell you what, I'll make you a deal over hey, did you know there's 8 billion people on this planet? You think about that when you know, 8 billion people and you ain't getting no bitches. Anyway, that's not the point. All right, okay. If the Grand Reaper were to show up and say, look, man, okay, there's way too many motherfuckers on this planet. Basically, announce death like a layoff, bro. When you get laid off, if you're lucky, you work for one of those companies and they offer you, they say you can keep working or we'll give you this nice severance package. So if death were to show up and gave you like a severance package and the severance package is, okay, death, but I will allow you to relive one of your greatest moments in life. I'm just saying, I would consider that fucking deal. Some of you are like, yo, fuck you, Dad. Fuck that, man. I'm living this life to the limit. Whatever, good for you. I don't know what your magic is, but I'm saying I'm in the percentage of the human population who are like, so tell me more about this deal, Def. Tell me more. Let me talk about it, you know? And it was sad. My happiest moments involved getting high. So, yeah, it would be one big ass drug fest going on. Yeah. Okay, kidding aside, I'm not surprised that we're at a point where this guy is like, yeah, fuck that. I would rather death than endure poverty. It's funny, and it's not just enduring poverty, but the rest of the world looks like, is looking at you like you're the one who fucked up. You're the one in this position. I recently saw a video, again on Reddit, of this man, this asshole recorded himself throwing water on this homeless woman, and it was cold, and the woman is like, what the fuck is your problem? And this dude is like, oh, fuck, you're loitering, you need to leave, whatever. And he says, and she's just like, I don't even have clothes to change into, because she's all wet and it's cold, and this ass. And the part that gets me the most about the video, he says, it's your fault that you're in this situation. Apparently, this dude is a business owner. I tell you what, if you email me, I'll send you, I'll try to find the article, and I'll try to find you the video and send it to you. Because it was kind of sketchy that a business owner would record themselves doing that shit. But then, you know, some people are just so stupid, and not knowing, like, you know, and about to feel the fury of the internet. Okay. If I confirm this information that this guy, and I know this person is actually a business owner, yeah, I'm boycotting this business for sure, even though it's not in my country, but that's not the point. But I'm just saying, what I'm getting at is there are so people who are so fucking indifferent about other people suffering, and it bothers me, man. Maybe that's my HSP kicking in here, but it bothers me that we fucking live in a world where people would, yeah, fuck that, I would rather choose death than have to hang out with you, than have to spend one more minute with you. Sorry, I'm laughing because I was quoting a song by Weird Al Yang. Yeah, to spend one more minute with you. But in this case, it's, you know, it's, yeah. So it's, look, man, only point to this segment is, like, people are going through some hard times. And don't be an asshole. You don't know what people are going through. Don't be an asshole. I mean, just try to be nice out there. Try to be kind to the, you don't know what people are going through, what demons they're fighting. But, you know, they're probably on a podcast struggling, trying to make sense out of this fucking world. Anyway, okay, all right, last piece of segment. It's not really a high. Yeah, next time I'm going to try to end with some moment of positivity. But so the last part is, I just wrote the line, George Floyd was a human being. And on the last podcast, I announced how I was talking about how I'm reading the book, going through the audio book. I'm pulling it up. It's called His Name is George Floyd. Oh, One Man's Life and the Struggle for Racial Justice. Yeah, man. And it's a beautiful story. It's amazing how him and I have a lot in common. We have a lot of differences. Don't get me wrong, George Floyd and I, but how he was like a gentle giant. He was a big dude, but he was really like, he had like a soft heart. He knew the importance of keeping, because he was a big dude. He knew that, you know, when white people are around you, he said people, but you know, but he especially knew that it was his responsibility to make sure white people felt safe around them, because when they see his height, and they immediately start thinking about, oh, it's the revolution. This black guy's gonna kill me, whatever. You know, he's gonna get slavery out of me, whatever. And his soft heart. We have a lot in common. And I'm bringing this up because I'm remembering how a lot of racist white people were bringing up how he had a criminal record, and the story about him pulling a gun on a pregnant woman. It makes more sense when you hear the entire story, the context to that story. No, there's no justification. First of all, it was alleged, he was accused of it. Yeah, he was convicted for it. But when you hear the story, I want to be clear. The book doesn't make excuses for his life, but it helps you establish that whatever the fuck you might think about George Floyd, you racist ass cracker white boy. Sorry, I'm having flashbacks here. I'm thinking of someone in specific when I'm talking about this guy. Whatever you might think about George Floyd, he was a human being who did not deserve to die the way he died. Dylan Roof is still alive. Was it Bernardo? What's his name? Bernardo. What's his name? I'm trying to. Paul Bernardo. He's still alive. He didn't go out like George Floyd. The motherfucker who shot up a movie theater. They people who've done bad shit didn't get what happened to George Floyd. Okay, so the only point is, whatever you might think about George Floyd, He was a human being who did not deserve to die the way he died. And his story is just so, it's, I don't know, it's giving me a lot to think of. Because on Wednesday, I remember I was feeling a little depressed about my life. And going through his story, it's helping me put things in perspective, so to speak. Especially knowing, like, it breaks my heart that we had so much in common. And I'm, like, it's so hard to imagine that he died the way he died. Well, you know, racist white people, you can't escape them. Derek Chauvin here. Oh, by the way, there's a chapter about Derek Chauvin in the book, too. But yeah, but that's not the point. It's man, the dude was just a victim of, it's just racism, man. Racism killed the dude. That's really what the bottom line to his story. He was a human being existing while black, and racism put an end to that shit. Another part that I'm learning a lot from his story is how the 12 three strikes, like America's obsession with putting black men in jail, and how they profit from it, the prison industrial complex, and how, yeah, we need you blackies in this prison, you know, and how slavery is still alive in there. But hearing the police aspect, the policing, prison industrial complex. Like, George Floyd had, you know, he's had many run-ins with the law before. And, again, read the story. Does better justice. It shows you he was a human being living life. And, you know, just whatever. And one thing the reading his story reminded me of, and it's got me rewatching, We Own the City. By the guy who made the Wire, We Own the City. Yes, Scorsese on OST. Chris Powers. No, that's not what I'm looking for. My brain is not working right now, man. Maybe because it's late. Maybe because I won't stop thinking about. Based on a book, We Own the City. Oh, I didn't know that. It was based on a book, A True Story of Crime. Cops and Corruption by Baltimore Sun reporter Justin Fenton. And David Simon. That's who I was created and written by David Simon. That's who I was trying to credit in here. But yeah, David Simon's a bit. But watching We Own the City while reading this book will help you understand the jungle, will help you give you insight into George Floyd's interaction with law enforcement, man. It's like, yeah, man, he could have been a character in one of the, he could have been a character in We Own the City. George Floyd could have been a character in We Own the City. Could have been a character in The Wire. And man, it's just, the whole story is a tragedy, man. And the thing that gets me the most is how George Floyd started out believing that he was going to change the world. That's what's heartbreaking about that shit. He was going to matter to this world. And fuck, man. It's just fucked up that it had to happen through death. Through death. Anyways, I'm at the last chapter. Like, I took a pause. I'm at the last chapter of the story. And it's titled Memorial Day. And because he died on Memorial Day, and I guess it's a 38 minute 21 second chapter. And I'm not going to rush that last chapter. I think it's just going to go into everything that led up to his death. And man, one big tragedy, man. It's a sad story, whatever. But I mean, life is fucked up like that, man. This is me getting philosophical with you guys and trying to make sense out of this world. It's like, some of us make history in life, and some of us do it in our death. I remember when Kobe Bryant passed away, when he died, and how all of a sudden I took an interest into his career. I started reading up on him, not his book, but, you know, magazine, listening to people, what they had to say, how he inspired people. When he was alive, I'm like, Kobe Bryant was just that name I heard in the barbershop and on TV, on Sports Channel. But after he died and hearing all my, you know, friends of mine talk about him and how he was like the epitome of excellence, and how, like, he so inspirational. It's like, it took his death. It's like, yeah, it's like we live two lives. It's like, I don't know. Maybe my life won't be, this is what I think is going to happen. This podcast is probably, but I won't be around to figure out if that actually happens or not, right? But this podcast, I won't be surprised if this podcast ends up being being popular when I'm dead. What's scary is, but that would mean for something to happen to me that happened to George Floyd. And, yeah, I'm not up for that. Not that you get a chance at that kind of shit. But I'm just saying, it's like, yeah. It's like I'm trying to negotiate with death. I'm like, okay, look, all right, okay, Vala Morghulis, if I have to die, let me die on a high note and make sure that people listen to my podcast after. I don't know. Yeah. Is that depressing? Okay, all right, okay. I'm going to make a note to next episode to end on something more positive, like, you know, a little moment of positivity. But this concludes tonight's episode of Shut Up Podcast. Holler at me like usual on name is B Blizak on Twitter. Okay, you know what? Twitter is a little fucked up right now. Elon Musk needs to get his ass kicked. Well, until further notice, I need to find a way, another spot on social media that you can find me. But until Twitter goes down, you can find me at holler at me at B Blizak or Shut Up Podcast. The website is, which is not going away until, still me, until they kill me. Website is shutuppodcast.com. Email address is shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. RSS feed, to subscribe to this podcast, just use the RSS feed on the website or find us on Google and Apple Podcasts. Thank you for listening. And remember, be kind to your favorite podcast. No sound effect today. All right. No sound effect. All right. Peace.